Hi, my name is Aida Peary, and it's October 13, 2022. And we are here with Martin Walker, recording at the Street Sense Media offices in Northwest Washington, D.C. There's some questions I'm going to ask of you. First of all, were you born or raised here in Washington, D.C.?
I was, and just call me Martin.
Is Miss Martin? Okay.
I said Martin.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about your childhood and your early life in school. Okay, can you describe how once you were brought in, you know, into the world and everything, the area that you lived in Washington, D.C., and some of the memories that you remember as a child?
Okay. All right, well, that's actually, I didn't see that question coming, but that's very good. So Let's take it from the beginning. Well, I was born, my family was living in Southeast Washington, D.C., in Congress Heights. I was born the last of five siblings, it was five of us. And my childhood memories go as I can remember going to Winnie the Pooh Nursery School. I can't remember where it was. I was too young. I went to Malcolm X Elementary School, and I'm pretty sure it was like very newly built at that time. We left Southeast, moved away from Washington when I was about 6 years old. Yeah, about 6 years old. And we moved to Landover, right over where FedEx Field is and the Jericho Mega Church. My childhood memories, though, even before we left D.C., I remember the little court that we lived in off of 13th Street in Congress Heights, Southeast. It was a nice little court. It was like a family court. Pretty much, you know, all the buildings, my neighbors used to babysit me while my mom was working. I remember getting out of school and going over Miss Marion's house and having milk and cookies after school, you know, just waiting for mom to get home. And my mother, she used to cook crabs for the community, I mean, for our little court and stuff like that. So, you know, and I had a group of little tight-knit friends, Jun, Milton, stuff like that. We had a lot of fun. I remember having a lot of fun as a child. Then we moved away and moved into Landover, Maryland. And I actually liked that more. I think because of the space. It's too much concrete in Washington, D.C., as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's not enough woods and stuff like that. And when we moved there, it was just a totally new experience for me to see open fields like where the Jericho Church is, used to be a farmer's field, where FedEx Field is, was another farmer's field. None of that was there when I was a child. And it was just open farmer's field with cows and stuff like that. And, you know, we used to do silly stuff like go shoot the cows with BB guns. And, you know, I was there and make the bull mad and he chases out, you know what I mean? Or just, you know, go wandering through the woods, you know, doing finding whatever, you know what I'm saying? I couldn't really do that in D.C., you know what I mean? So I found that to be very early liberating experience. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so since from your, you know, from your childhood, your life in D.C., has it changed? You know, when you, what it is today, what it was when you was a child? I mean, do some of the landmarks disappear? Reappear, you know, back in Southeast when you were living there in Landover. What, you know, what has changed?
Okay, well, all right. Well, just like the rest of the world, it has picking up a very, very fast pace. Things are not as slow as they used to be back then. And DC being like the epicenter of the planet, you know, so I guess makes it even more so. Things have changed. They have restructured certain parts of certain communities in all four quadrants, southeast, northeast, northwest, southwest. A lot of landmarks have been moved. Like, for instance, the Awakening, the statue of the Awakening, they dug that up out of Anacostia, I believe is where it was, or Haynes Point is where it was. Mm-hmm. And they moved it over to the MGM, new casino area or whatever. And I haven't been over there since they moved it over there, but I was actually responsible in some part in grading that land. I was working with a construction company at the time, Herb Winston Construction, and I was driving big operating heavy equipment on site and driving dump trucks and stuff like that. So we made the roads and all that for the little casino. But yeah, and the fact that they even brought a casino to town, not just that, but live sports betting down in Chinatown. A lot has changed. 8th Street in Northeast, which has always been somewhat plagued as a very difficult area to tolerate, you know, to put it at the very least. I remember back in the late 90s, a woman was killed over there by what they called the 8th and H crew. You wasn't around mm-hmm. then. But they basically raped this woman with a broomstick and to her demise. And, just a very violent incident. And that's the one thing that has not changed about D.C. is its violent nature. It's a very dangerous place, I think, to be brought up in.
So are there any restaurants or stores that are no longer, you know, in your neighborhood that you kind of miss? Can you explain anything like that? You mentioned about 8th Street, but I heard some, before the lady got killed, I heard that there used to be a lot of nightlife, a lot of black clubs.
Well.
During the 80s and 70s or something
okay.
like that.
Yeah, okay. And I was about to say that was my pre-adulthood during those times. I've heard about it as well, where it used to be a lively quarter and stuff like that of Washington, D.C. But mind you, I was born in 1971, so I didn't become an adult until like 1991, you know, or 92, you know. And during that period of time, I think it's when that aspect of that particular area was kind of broken down and demoralized by violence and crime and stuff like that.
Okay.
But, and then mm-hmm. there's one favorite restaurant I can remember that I liked a whole lot. It was in it was called TNT, but that was like right on the border, Maryland and DC, right there on Eastern Avenue. But yeah, I miss TNT.
Okay, so let's talk about Street Sense. How and when did you first hear about Street Sense?
Okay. All right, I was staying in a shelter, Franklin Shelter. Franklin Men's Shelter, which is no longer open. It was actually at that point, it was the largest men's shelter in Washington, D.C., and one of the first or second largest men's shelter in the country. Second D just happens to hold that type now, CCM. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, CCMB. But when I started staying at Franklin Shelter, you know, I was new to the whole homeless, you know, experience. And it was like, in the beginning, trying to feel your way through a totally new environment. It's like being in a different planet, you know, from the planet that you were on. And so I had to, while I was staying at the shelter, I had to learn how to function as a homeless individual. And basically, you know, so what I had to do was take my time day by day, step by step, and just watch and observe the homeless individuals, their actions, their comings, goings, you know, their daily routines and stuff like that, because I wasn't used to being in this type of situation. My time was always occupied with a job or with the house, you know what I'm saying, or the vehicle or the kid or the girl or something like that. So it was just, it was totally new to be me being by myself in a strange environment. So it's an adjustment phase that I had to go through. And I also had to learn very quickly some street survival techniques. So as I was watching people while I was in the shelter, I observed a guy named Howard. He was one of the street sense vendors, that was here when street sense was started. I forget Howard's last name right now. But anyway, I used to see Howard walking through Franklin Park, and he would always have his street sense vest on. I never seen him running back and forth to the food trucks or anything like that. He always had his own cigarettes, and he always had some money, you know, which to me set him apart from pretty much everybody else I was observing at the time. And so one day while I was sitting in the park just observing and, you know, seeing him, you know, on another occasion for numerous times, you know, I just decided to walk up and ask him. I was like, man, what is this? What's that green vest that you sporting? What are you doing? You always seem to have money. You always, you know, got your own cigarettes. He was like, yeah, well, excuse me. He was like, well, I sell a newspaper for a nonprofit organization, you know, it's a homeless publication. And I was like, really? And I was like, well, how does it work? He was like, well, you should come down to the office and, you know, they can tell you all about it, but you can make you some money, you know, until you get yourself on your feet and stuff like that. And you ain't got to work, beg people for nothing and, you know, stuff like, or just sit around all day doing nothing. So I was like, all right, and I came. And I was very happy that I came to Street Sense. You know, until this day, I'm still very happy that I found Street Sense, because it has helped me a whole lot along the way.
So how long have you been working with Street Sense Media?
Oh, man. So I'm going to say, like, August 2005.
Wow, so you've been here, what, 18 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and during that time, I've done a whole lot for and with Street Sense. I've done interviews with the BBC, the AP, several schools around the nation. I was on NBC and CBS Morning News. What else? I served as the vendor trainer, the vendor manager. I was one of the board. I was the first vendor turned board member. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I kind of feel like it's my baby.
So how has working with Street Sense Media impacted your life for this past 18 years?
Wow. Independence. For instance, for a working person, if you don't have a job, or the minute that you are no longer employed, you start to worry about income. Since I found Street Sense, I've adopted a certain motto. I said, as long as I have papers, I'll never be broke. I don't have to worry about a paycheck. I don't have to worry about just sitting outside some establishment or something like that, begging or panhandling. It's a self-sustaining type of, operation. I mean, as long as you can get your papers, you can get money to continue to survive until you can do better for yourself.
Okay, is there something you wish more people knew about Street Sense Media or your work with Street Sense Media?
That's a difficult question. Let me think about it. I wish everyone knew that the vendors buy their papers. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just assume that we just get free papers. We show up any day, I'll have 100. You know what I'm saying? And it's just not like that. If I have 100, it's going to cost me $50. Mm-hmm. Wish that people would understand that it's more so of an individual who's willing to help themselves, but being responsible enough to kind of chart and choreograph their own business. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So how is Street Sense Media important to you?
It just means so much to me. Just being here from, the very early beginning of the paper, with both the founder and the co-founder together, and playing the various different roles that I've played here. It means so much to me. Another thing that I said a long time ago, I said I will always be a part of Street Sense.
What is something that you want people to know about your story that you think is often misunderstood?
Well, I guess for one, I would say I didn't ask or wish to be in this situation. And it's a very difficult thing to get out of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially in this geographical area with the cost of living and all the, blue tape, I guess you call it. You gotta, circles, hamster wheels that you gotta go through. You sort of feel like you get bounced around from agency to agency sometime here in D.C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know how that is. Yeah. You're always being misunderstood about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But did you see this issue? I'm hoping, people will start reading it.
Well,
because it's because the way they have it is about the homeless or always got mental health issues, right, or we're alcoholics, yeah, or drug addicts.
Yeah.
Well, golly, right. You have a lot of people who own homes that got the same symptoms.
You understand. So, you know, it's just so funny that you brought that up, you know, as a human judgmental point of view. You know, it seems like those that are not less fortunate always are those so quick to judge
mm-hmm.
others, you know.
Exactly.
And it's like, I'm 51 years old, or I'll be 51 next week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a grown man. Can I have a drink? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a living room. Is it cool if I do it right here on my bench? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You know, you go home every day and have drinks, and probably stop at the bar first and have a few before you get there. You know,
mm-hmm.
Am I hurting anybody right now if I took a couple of drinks? You know.
Yeah, but they hurt other people when they stop at that bar and mm-hmm. have a few drinks, mm-hmm. jump behind that
right.
wheel.
Mm-hmm.
They're intoxicated, okay. but they think they're
right.
not.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing, boom.
Boom. Yeah.
Anything. You know, and then they're like, oh. And they're the main ones to do the hit and run.
Right.
Man.
Let me tell you.
It's crazy. But you're right about
yeah.
judging.
Yeah.
You can't judge people
yeah.
because of their situation. Because
yeah.
you can be, a lot of people today are one check behind of being homeless.
Yeah. And not just that. But first of all, if you're going to do something, like for instance, you know, if you're judging me as a street sense vendor or a homeless individual or however you may be looking at me at the particular time while I'm doing what I'm doing, I'll say this, you know. Well, first of all, it's not any human's place to judge another.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have not walked through that individual's mm-hmm. shoes, path, or life, or anything. You don't know where I've come from, what I've gone through, and what I had to, you know,
mm-hmm.
what I had to do to survive and stuff like that. And what I'm still going through, you know,
mm-hmm.
what obstacles that I'm trying to overcome to get out of this situation,
mm-hmm.
you know. So for you, you know, for somebody to make a statement to me like, well, I don't want to buy a paper and give you $2 if it's just going to go for drugs or alcohol. You know what I'm saying? But look, man, but just be quite honest with you. The $2 that you do or don't give me ain't going to stop me one way or another from doing whatever my grown mind decides that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You know? And it definitely ain't going to help further any positive cause as well. You understand what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, save judgment for yourself. You know what I'm saying? You know,
mm-hmm.
don't judge me. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't know me.
Right, exactly. And you don't know what the shoes are.
Right.
You can't feel my shoes.
Yeah.
You know. Right. But, I liked when you were saying earlier about people thinking that you know, vendors get free papers that we don't pay for the papers for 50 cents and stuff.
Right.
And we're responsible, you know, vendors.
Yeah.
We're recovering from being in the streets.
Right.
We're recovering from losing a job. We're recovering
from
everything that we so used to having.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden it's gone.
Yeah.
I've been there, done that.
Exactly.
You know, and you're just like, oh, shoot.
Exactly.
What just happened?
What just happened? How did I end up here? You know, it's like that movie Down and Out in Beverly Hills with Nick Nolte and Richard Dreyfuss and Bette Midler. You know, when Nick Nolte, you know, he apparently was an educated man at one
mm-hmm.
point in his life
mm-hmm.
and had a pretty good life, and then it just happened. You know what I'm saying? You know, you know, and it could happen. It really could to anybody on the planet.
Exactly, and you know, and then Street Sense is a blessing for a lot of us because it teaches us to be responsible adults.
Adults, yeah.
And it's important that staff, alliterates it, make sure that we push that.
Right, right.
Because this is what our CEO, Brian, you know, has mentioned over and over in our meetings, our, you know, vendor meetings. Yeah. This is a business, but at the same time, it's personal among the vendors.
And
staff, you know, to get them back up on their feet.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter about whether they're alcoholics or they got mental health issues and this and that and the other. Oh, hell no. Yeah. And y'all got it too.
Right.
And you're living in your $2,300 a month apartments.
Yeah, right.
You know, but
right.
you're able to maybe with your medication and going through it about 50, 150 times of getting the right meds, but you still have it.
Yeah.
You have it in your families or you going through it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
You know,
so stop judging with the people who don't have homes.
And this whole,
help us get homes.
And this entire planet right now, as far as I'm concerned, has mental issues. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, if you think about anything from bipolar, schizophrenia, to PTSD, everybody has something.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody has been traumatized or still being traumatized by something. You know, there's so many things that can be traumatizing. You know, I watched a little dog get hit. That was very traumatizing for me. You know what I'm saying? The car, big old Cadillac, land on top of this little Maltese, and dog just look at me like, why? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh my God, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so.
That can imprint your mind for a long time.
Yeah, you know, and I don't, you know, not that that's the issue that I'm speaking of now in particular, but, you know, it's death is always personal death, the death of ones close to me. Has always been something hard for me to deal with as well, you know, and and to recover from.
It's hard for everybody, trust me.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
Yeah.
I mean, I think 5 billion people go through that.
Yeah, right. You
this know? Is just right. something, I mean, some can cover it up than others, you know, and then you got people running around, them, well, I'm depressed. Well, depressed of what? That's
right.
PTS, that's mental illness. That could be,
duh. Yeah, that covers a very broad range. I'm depressed. Yeah. Well who ain't? You know.
Hello.
Yeah.
Everybody's can be that way, but I do love Street Sense Media very, very much, and I'm glad that you actually said it. You know, because that's what it's all about. It's for us to get back up into society, because we weren't born homeless.
Right.
We definitely didn't think about as a kid that I want to be a homeless man
you
or
know
woman.
What I mean? Yeah, you said, you know what? I think I'm gonna give up my office job and my little self propriety, and I'm gonna go live on the streets. That's something straight off of TV. That's not normal human nature. You know what I'm saying? I didn't ask for this to happen. You know what I mean? You know, just kind of got behind. One thing led to another, you know. Had the beefing with the landlord, you know. Next thing I know, I lost the place, the car, the dog, the girl, you know what I'm saying? It just went like that, you know.
When you lose your job or if you end up being a medical or you even deplete your savings like I did,
shit.
And then you only get one time emergency rental money, and that takes forever to get that.
Yeah. And it didn't cover ever. And for me, that was part of the major issue of getting me out here on the streets was unemployment didn't cover all my bills. You know what I mean? I was renting a house. I had a big K-9, had a girl, had a car. You know what I'm saying? Was there electric bills? You know, it's just not covering everything. So that's how I initially started getting behind. And then, you know. Yeah, so one thing led to another.
Exactly.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, so what changes would you like to see made in terms of addressing homelessness as an issue at a governmental level?
Well, you know, okay. I'm glad you asked that question, too, because everybody's trying to. Everywhere, it seems like, in this nation, in every state, everybody's trying to trying to make this such a difficult issue on how to address. I'm not sure. I want to say Finland or Norway, one of them, has free housing for everybody. Right? It's not like that we can't do that.
Exactly.
You understand what I'm saying? It's not like we can't do that. And I even like the way that I heard that they do it, which is all of the places look exactly the same. You know, so whether you're working class or whether you're lower class, whatever, you're in the same type of environment. It's you know, free housing. Housing should be a right for it. I think that really should be a human right, you know what I'm saying? No human should have to be forced just because of his monetary situations to sleep in a dangerous position where he could be attacked by dangerous animals or dangerous humans. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just, you know, it's weird. I mean, you know, unless you're going to figure out how to, you know, keep money in every individual's pocket from the top tier to the lower tier, you know what I'm saying? Which will probably never happen because the top tier monopolizes all the money anyway, which is why the lower class gets as such, you know, finds themselves in so many difficult situations, you know what I'm saying, over and over again, that a lot of them will never overcome simply because they don't control the money or the class, you know.
Yeah, I have a little problem with that, too. I remember I did an interview with Cory Booker, and he was in agreement with me because the way I put it to him was like, you know, he's in Senate, right, on the Hill, and I said, you know, when prices go up, so should our income
Should go with automatic.
Automatically. Because, and then and then we can also pay our rent.
Right.
You know, we can pay for this, we can pay for that, and then there's some of the other little luxuries, things like cars. But cars not always a luxury thing. It's actually a right, too, because if you got a job that is like miles away from where you live and a bus or a train can't get you there, or it can get you there, but then once you get off the train, you still need a car to get
right,
to your
job.
And that happens a lot, you know, and you still need a car. And so you need to you have to pay for your car note and this and that and the other. You're babysitting if you got children.
And, you know,
daycare. You know, all that stuff goes in one. And we shouldn't have to struggle from paycheck to paycheck.
And the struggle has gotten worse over time because of that simple fact that you just brought up. It's when the cost of living goes up here for years. The wage increases have not been there to follow it. So if you didn't come from a background of a degree or something like that or of privilege, then as your cost of living in your surrounding areas are increasing and your pay wages aren't, you're getting further and further behind and behind, and it's going to be harder not only for you but people in your particular, all people in your particular situation to get caught up on. And it's not fair.
It's not fair. And then talking about bringing up the interest rate again. How you bring up the interest rate again on a COVID-19 situation? We ain't even got over the pandemic.
Right.
Who's going to be paying all this? You and me, of course. Every time we walk into a store. You know, that's who's going to be paying for this interest rate, not the rich.
Yeah, not the rich. They just gonna get richer and figure out ways to skirt the tax, like Donald Trump claimed his genius over. That just makes me smart. I don't pay taxes cause I'm smart. Yeah, but you're not setting
the bills either.
Yeah. You're not setting a very presidential temper. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, I'm not gonna get started on that. But
Yeah. Now, he doesn't pay his bills.
Yeah, right.
He files for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And now he can't even file bankruptcy anymore. His banks have refused to loan him money.
Right.
So he's got to go to foreign banks to get the money. And man, he still owes them money.
Yeah. See, I'm almost about to go political. I mean, I don't want to do it, though. He tried to sell our country and buy Norway. I said, he must be crazy. I said, no one gets away with talking to the U.S. like that on my watch. I said, man, are you nuts? You think you can buy a country from one person? And what about the other people in the country? What they going to have to say about this? You know what I'm saying? I said, I'm the president. I decided to sell Norway. We now belong to the U.S. You know, first of all, your life is over in a couple of seconds since somebody's coming to kill you. You know what I'm saying? You know, I don't know. Then the dude is nuts, but I'm not even going to get started on his sadistic thing. You know, but, yeah.
Yeah, well. And
things definitely haven't gotten better with him around. Nothing on the planet. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for Martin and for coming and coming on time. Yeah. I know I wasn't on time. That's because I couldn't find y'all.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, not a problem.
You know, and I'm glad that, you know, you're a good candidate for this interview because I do love Street Sense Media very, very much. You know I am.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do. Yeah. I defend a lot of people, certain people.
Yeah.
You know, but even though some people don't think so, but that's their problem.
Right. That's true. Can't worry about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed the interview, Aida, and I'm glad that y'all chose me to do it. And it was pretty invigorating just to go through some of the history of me and Street Sense and me and my life so far on the streets. But, it's interesting just to look back on. But thanks for the interview.
You're welcome.
And I guess that'll be about it.